Chapter 27, Part 5, Being Doubly Enlightened. That is why the sage always excels in caring for people and rejects no one. After what we have been saying about Chapter 27, you will be able to understand these words because you now know what and who a sage is in the Taoist sense. The sage is a person who, having crossed the frontier of the order of time and space, has entered the new life field and become capable of functioning in this heaven-earth. In that state of being, the cognitive faculty is built up under the guidance of the living soul state in the power of the Seven Spirit. The path to the other shore begins in this ordinary nature. It starts with a personality which is entirely one with this nature, since it is in this order of existence that the personality is conscious. This personality discovers that it exists in a nature of death, which is governed by the law of antitheses. It discovers that the values, powers, and abilities it possesses are not absolute. They are constantly turning into their opposites. When, as a result of all this experience, the personality being realizes that all his troubles are fruitless, that everything comes and goes, and all kinds of questions begin to come up in his mind, the voice of the rose can awaken in his heart. The nuclear principle of the microcosm can begin to speak, urging him to undertake the journey to the true life, to seek the land on the other shore. Knowing that not a single one of his abilities is absolute, the individual becomes aware that his inner being does not yet measure up to a number of fundamental requirements, and he begins to make his paths straight in the desert, in the chaotic desolation of his personal state of being. He descends right down into the deepest depths of his being, and in this way, the soul is born. What is the soul? The soul is an organized concentration of gnostic light power, of the astral substance, of the true life state. These light forces enter the personality system, accumulate in the etheric double, and shine in the darkness of the individual's life. They give nourishment, food, and drink to the person who is engaged in making straight his paths. This soul state is a wonderful possession. It shines, as we said, in the darkness, as well as giving food and alleviating thirst. But as the soul light grows, the human being is also permitted to behold a glimpse of the other shore. The vision becomes increasingly clear, the path increasingly straight, and in this way it becomes less and less necessary for the eye of nature to try frantically to make the best of things and arrive at a solution, and more possible for the soul consciousness to take the lead in the individual's life and guide it consciously to the nadir. The individual's course of development then undergoes a qualitative change. Previously, the direction of the path that had to be made straight was quite unknown. It was obscured by all kinds of obstacles. But all these obstacles must yield in the light of the soul. Nothing can withstand it. In this way, the soul-born person approaches the other shore. Behind him the darkness, before him the light of a new dawn. While he is diving into the water so as to pass through it to the other shore, or perhaps while he is laboriously scaling the opposite bank, the heavens break open and the dove descends upon him. The Spirit descends upon him, the Sephiroth, the Holy Spirit, and straight away the cognitive faculty is born. The cognitive faculty, the synthesis of the Spirit, the soul, and the personality. The soul is the emissary of the fire, the Spirit is the fire itself. This is what we call being doubly enlightened. Once in this state of being, the sage will always excel in caring for people and will never reject anyone. For he works not only with the goodness innate in him, purified by suffering, but also with the light of love of the truly living soul and with the firepower of the all-encompassing holy healing spirit. That is what the ancients meant by being doubly enlightened. Now that we know this, we can glimpse something of the work of the universal chain and its many servants, who return from the other shore to the lands of darkness, does that mean a return to all the former dangers? Absolutely not. For the sage who has reached this state of twofold enlightenment of spirit and soul has entered a reality which is omnipresent beyond time and space. Such a person can remain in that reality, wherever he may be. He exists in the inviolable. We do not want you to understand this in the three-dimensional time-spatial sense, for instance, in the way you understand the separation between white and black, or between the perfect and the imperfect, but in terms of the deepest significance of the words, in the world, but not of the world. The sage can move anywhere in the world without identifying with its phenomena and thereby sustaining harm, and the sage will do that because all God's creatures must be led to a good end, to their goal, to their destiny. That is why any creature that has already been liberated has a task to fulfill with respect to all those who are not. Any creation which is manifesting in full glory will always be used to help and serve creations which are still in the process of development. That is why nothing and no one can escape the care and attention of the sages. If we try to view this mighty work from above, we see countless creatures in manifestation in countless domains of the all manifestation, all of them in widely differing stages of development. We also see the enormous hierarchy of liberated beings and sages adapting themselves to the developmental stages and the nature and essence of all those countless beings so as to stand by them and be of service to them. Must only the good be helped? What is good? No one is good who still exists in the first phases of development, not even one. Must the sages remain aloof from the bad? Why should they? Isn't so-called evil really only the product of ignorance and weakness? Aren't the appalling deeds people commit very often motivated by forces beyond their control? It is these people, especially, who must be helped in the most highly intelligent way, carefully adapted to their state of being. Surely all need to come home to the house of the Father? That is why the sage does not reward evil with lenience, as humanists are inclined to do, but with the wisdom which flows from the one plan which lies at the foundation of the all. So the sage is not the judge but the teacher of the bad. All the behavior of those who deviate from the plan and thereby create the most awful situations is studied closely. Then they can be treated in keeping with their state, so that the plan, which also lies at the foundation of their being, will one day succeed. It is in this sense that the bad is the teacher of the good.